On today's show, we're hanging out with comedian superstar Ronnie Chang as he talks about his role in the movie Shang-Chi and the Legends of the Ten Rings. My name is Justin Hamilton, and this is going to take your brand to a whole new level here on Big Squid. Welcome to today's podcast, where I catch up with the wonderful Ronnie Chang and talk about his role in the new Marvel movie, but also a little bit about his career and what he's learned along the way. What a treat. What an absolute treat to catch up with Ronnie. I met him, gosh, it's well over 10 years ago, and it has just been really lovely to see him not only succeed at his craft, but also just see the man he's grown into today. Like, it's hard to describe, and it can sometimes sound a little bit patronizing, so I don't mean it in that way, but he is essentially, at his core, the same great kid I met now as a man. And, you know, it's so exciting to see him do really well overseas and just be kicking goals left, right, and center. And, you know, I think one of the privileges of growing older is, and you, by the way, you have to take the time to look beyond yourself to appreciate this, but you can see all sorts of people growing and I guess becoming fully realized versions of themselves all the time. So you don't see it when it's happening to you. You don't necessarily see it with your peers, but once you have enough experience, you can see it happening to other people, and it's incredibly exciting. Look, to be honest, sometimes it can be a little bit disappointing because not everyone turns into a great person, but with the people that are lovely, it's a really nice privilege, and just seeing Ronnie continue to be one of the good guys in our industry feels like a win. Before we bring Ronnie in, a few quick things for you to keep in mind. This podcast you're listening to doesn't contain spoilers for Shang-Chi. We will talk about some of the actors in the movie. We may talk about a scene or two, but you don't have to worry. They're from early in the movie, so it doesn't give anything away. If you don't want to even know that stuff, then maybe tread carefully or wait until you've seen the movie, but it is spoiler-free, so you'll be fine. Tomorrow, I'll release a new podcast with Alexi Toliopoulos. We will discuss the whole film. It will be spoilers ahoy, so I'm just warning you now. Maybe if you haven't seen the film or you're about to see it, download and wait and then check it out. But if you're on the fence and you want to hear us talk about it, then maybe it'll be a good one for you to listen to because, you know, spoiler alert now, Alexi and I had a really good time. So, you know, maybe it'll push you over the line. The other thing is that we've set up a Patreon finally. I know you kept asking, I kept pushing back, and now it's finally happening. So, depending on which tier you sign up to, you'll be able to get your hands on scripts for the shows, specials that you can contribute to. As an example, Rove and I have recorded a special Q&A podcast that was completely shaped by subscribers' questions. And we have more plans coming up, big plans. So if you'd like to join us, head over to Patreon, Justin Hamilton Big Squid, and you'll be able to find us over there. Part of the deal is that each new Patreon will get an episode dedicated to them. And today's episode goes out to Rachel Blair, one of the first two people who signed up. Rachel has been a regular contributor to our private Facebook page and has been one of the staunch supporters of this podcast. And look, I said this about our first Patreon sign up, which was Sean. Between Rachel and Sean, if they hadn't signed up so quickly, this season was gonna start I think my plan was like the last week of October, maybe even the first week of November, but because they were so enthusiastic, because they threw their lot in so quickly, it inspired me to get this baby rolling. So if you're wrapped that you're getting three episodes this week, you got to thank Rachel. And I'll thank Rachel for signing up to the Patreon. Okay, enough of that stuff. Let's get to the utterly delightful Ronnie Chang. So good to see you, Ronnie, and congratulations on Shang-Chi and the Legend of the Ten Rings. First of all, I have to say to you, the world building in this film is, it's up there with, for me, Black Panther. It is such a beautifully realized film. And I just wondered, like, when did you kind of have a feeling it was going to be of this level of quality?
Thank you. And thanks for watching it. Thanks for having me on. And really good to see you again. I haven't seen you so long. I it's very awkward for me to talk about how good it is because it comes off as a little bit conceited. So I'll try to keep it more objective. I'm glad you really liked it. I'm glad you thought the world building was cool. I think with this kind of goes, what the question you just asked me goes into show business and storytelling, a part of the industry, which is that when you're part of a bigger project, it's very hard to know how it will turn out. Because most normal humans don't understand the number of things that have to go right for something to be good, you know? And you know, you need a good script, you need good actors, you need good director, you need good production designer, crew, stunt people, you need good editors in the post-production. And then let's say, and not to mention the rest of the crew, right, that I'm not naming, and then and good producers who know how to make good decisions. So all those things need to fall into place. And then even if all those things fall into place, the marketing needs to be good.
Right.
If the marketing doesn't come through, you know, the whole thing kind of it no one watches it, and then becomes, if you're lucky, it becomes a cult classic that gains a following. If you're not lucky, no one, it kind of gets buried in all the content we have these days, you know. So to answer your question about when did you know, like you never really know, right? You just get a feeling on set. You get a feeling that, oh, you're part of something really special. Sometimes you catch some of the what you just shot, you get to see some of it. You're like, oh man, that looks really cool, you know, or you see some magic on the day. Whether you're lucky to be part of the magic, or maybe you saw someone else doing the magic, you feel magic on the day. You're like, oh, that's cool. But until, you know, you never know how it's going to be received. You never know how it's going to be put together, especially me. I'm just a small role in it, right? So I don't have nearly the scope of, like, let's say, Kevin Feige, who's seeing movies and everything. So, yeah. So to answer your question, you never really know. You just get hints. You get hints from the script. You get hints from the people you're working with. Right, you see the magic on the day,
So I'm guessing it's the when you're watching it for the first time and the final after credit scene ends, you go, "Yep, that was great."
I mean, me, of course. I mean, I was excited to be part of it, and to be honest, the first time I saw it was at the premiere. I didn't see anything much. I did some ADR, which is when you're in post production and you have to basically record audio that they put into the movie. And so when I was doing ADR, I could see some of the scenes that I was in, but I never saw all of it or much. I didn't even see all my scenes, you know, I didn't see the whole movie. So the first time I saw it was in theaters, and I was like, oh, this is cool. You know, it's cool. It felt exciting. I felt elated. Yeah, it was. And obviously I'm biased. So I, you know, whatever, like I was like, oh, I think it's cool. Everyone here seems to think it's cool. You know, I hope other people also think it's cool. And
mate, it was the first time I'd been to the cinema in like about 3 months. And Alexia and I had a guy on who was kind of to our left and behind us who laughed at every line like it was the best moment of his life. And it was intoxicating because, you know, I've watched a lot of movies by myself for all these weeks. So to have someone, he's having a good time. Alexi's having a good time. That person's having a good time. I'm having a good time. What a nice experience. Yeah.
What a nice experience. And I honestly hope, like, even before the pandemic or even before Netflix, you know, I think we kind of took it for granted a bit.
Yeah.
You know, even before Netflix, we were like, movies, whatever. Let's watch at home. We can be in our underwear and eat whatever we want. And then I think kind of maybe it's like this hipster, nostalgic kind of post-modern reaction to all the streaming services is almost like, let's go back into cinemas. It's cool. It's like, it's so old school, like hip. And then when you're there, like, oh, this is actually fun with other people on a big screen and you're out of the house. And you know, just like stand-up comedy, right? Like, I always feel like when people put something into it, they get more out of it. Right. As opposed to like just on demand. So when you put time and energy into it, meaning you leave the house and all that that entails, parking and maybe a babysitter or whatever, and then you physically use your energy to enter a cinema and pay money, and you're sitting there and like you invest energy into it and you get more out of the experience, right? Because you're invested. Just like stand up is like that's why free tickets for stand up is always like the death of comedy.
Right.
You know, it's just that power dynamic just changes a bit, and it sounds like a trick, but it's part of the experience, right? So if you have a good movie, it's part of the experience.
Maybe cinema's going to be the new vinyl record collector
thing.
I think so. I'm up for that. You know, one of the things that is great about the film is that it's really funny, but it's not funny like Guardians of the Galaxy. It's not funny like a Thor movie. It's not funny even quite like a normal Avengers film. There's something it's a little bit gentler, and sometimes when you say gentle, that can be misconceived as a negative, but there's something very gentle about the comedy, but the comedy is consistent all the way through. Was that written on the page, or was that something that the actors brought in their performance, or maybe a bit of both?
Yeah, a bit of both. I think it was definitely in the pages. I think comedy is a big part of the Marvel formula. I'm not even saying this as like an insider, just as a fan, just like you, watching all the Marvel movies, you're like, oh, they figured something out, right? They figured out some mixture of comedy in that equation makes it hit. And that's why I think Marvel is a brand that people trust, right? Because they have a track history of building these things. And even though they built so many superhero movies, I have to say that I honestly feel, not just because I'm I have a small role in one, but every movie still feels pretty unique, and they have a backbone. So there's like a theme, right, for each movie. And so even though every movie kind of feels unique, you know, I think I don't want to give away what the theme is for this movie, but it's something to do with family and displacement. Yeah. And I think that what you're referring to in terms of the humor, I think it has to go back to the unique subject material in this, which is that this is kind of dealing with an immigrant superhero that's displaced in America. And so because of that, like, the style of comedy is actually, you can't do the same jokes that Captain America does.
Right.
Because the subject matter and where you're coming from as the characters are different. You know, if you really want to get really nerdy and analyze the comedy, which is what this podcast, I think, is about.
Absolutely, it is.
Yeah. It's just like on The Daily Show, like, so one of the go-to moves in Daily Show correspondent comedy was always self-deprecation.
Right.
It's like self-deprecating. You know, Steve Carell was self-deprecating. Colbert would be self-deprecating. When I joined the show, we also would do self-deprecation. But like, when you're like an Asian immigrant in America, the self-deprecation hits differently, because it's almost like you're like playing to what white people think Asian people or Chinese people are on TV, which is like self-deprecatingly, you know, submissive, which you're technically doing the same self-deprecation that the white correspondents were doing, but it just hits differently. It says something else. And so I bring all this up just as an example of like, that's why, to your point, you know, I think the comedy hits differently, because you can't play the same beats that Guardians of the Galaxy were playing, you know, because these weren't aliens in another galaxy. This was like a Chinese character in America who was, he's essentially a introverted person trying to hide from the world and feeling not just displaced, but, you know, he doesn't have power in this society. Yeah. He's escaping from it. He's a minority in American society. So to have the same comedic angle, whether it's high status doesn't work for him, whether it's, you know, self-deprecating, it doesn't, you know, obviously there's some self-deprecation, but I'm just saying it hits different to a character who is more in control, more in power. For example, Black Panther, who is he's the king, he's the prince, even though
he's regal.
Right. So it hits differently. So I think that's kind of what you were feeling in it. You know, if we're to speak generally about it, which is tough for comedy to speak generally about.
But it's you know, even the first time you meet Shang-Chi, you know, like without giving anything away, from the first point where he kind of wakes up to where he goes in his job, and it's a really funny moment, but it's a real this is where this guy is. But also there's a contentment and like a peacefulness within the character in his everyday life with the people that he mixes with, you know, even when he's out to dinner and stuff like that. And Simu Liu, my god, like, he's so damn likable. Like, from the first scene, just like, what a dreamboat. I loved him.
Yeah, he's great. And they cast, like, you know, Awkwafina and Simu are both, they've got serious comedy chops.
Yeah.
You know, they come from, like, Simu literally sitcom, and I've seen him live. Yeah, like, he hosted a awards ceremony where he wrote his own jokes and he sang. And, like, he's got comedy chops, you know, and Awkwafina obviously have comedy chops, but...
Far out. Awkwafina, like, as Katie, she is spectacular in the film.
Yeah, but they played it, they didn't go max comedy, right? So it's interesting that they chose people with comedic chops to be in the main roles. And I think that goes back to what you're saying earlier about the gentleness of the comedy. It's just inherently there because these guys are, you know, they have it in their bones, you know?
Yeah, and I like that there's not a kind of romantic interest, you know? I like that they're friends. It was just such a breath of fresh air. But there were still moments, like when Katie sees Shang-Chi with his shirt off for the first time, there's still a moment where she goes, what just happened?
Yeah. It's pretty funny. And also Simu is, like, it's pretty funny how, like, he's just naturally, as a person, he's ripped.
Right.
He's just a ripped, like, like that. That's not the Marvel workout. If anything, that's, you know, that's like the Marvel workout didn't. I don't know if it did anything for him, because it was. He was already ripped. Yeah, he's naturally just genetically looks like that.
Must be a burden, right?
Yeah, I know. I mean, take what you want from that. But he's just naturally ripped.
Yeah. had you ever read the Shang-Chi comic when you were younger?
No, but I was aware of it, but I never read it. And I think that actually, I actually liked when they did it, because, you know, a lot of these characters, we've heard their stories so many times. Like, Spider-Man is like literally the legendary origin story, you know, even Captain America and Iron Man. So I genuinely like, oh man, they found an Asian character that has heritage. There is heritage, right? So it's connected. Yeah. It's not just, they didn't just pull it out of their butts to make an Asian character. Like, it's got heritage, but you can put anything you want into that character. Right. You can literally, because it's so open to interpretation, you know, because there's no, it's not in pop culture. So you don't have the burden of the canon.
Yes. But it also has a wonderful history as well. Like, it's the Steve Englehart, Jim Starlin stuff that started it off. And when Paul Gulacy comes on as an artist, it's some breathtaking stuff. But it was also one of the harder titles to find when I was younger, you know. So being able to bring it to the big screen, as you said, and not be encumbered by, you know, someone coming up saying, nah, he couldn't do that because in issue 7, 1983.
Not encumbered by the weight of the canon that, by the way, isn't it funny how as adults now, when we read comics, we're like, oh, every like 20 years, they have to literally just wipe out the canon with some massive universe changing event, because there's just too much canon on everybody's shoulders that they can't write anymore. So the idea that, oh yeah, they found this character that they can write whatever they want. And it was interesting. I think what I really like about character is, like, I think one of the things that makes Spider-Man one of the more popular characters in the Marvel universe is the vulnerability. Right, that he's not Superman. He has just enough superpowers to get the job done.
Yeah.
But not, you know what I mean? He's like just enough to handle himself, but like in terms of his superpowers. And most of the time he has to rely on kind of ingenious thinking or problem solving. And I think Shang-Chi is the same in the sense that like he's not this all powerful, right? Like all powerful, invulnerable, omnipotent, can fly around and you know, whatever. He's just, he's essentially just a regular dude with some good training and
some baggage too. Like he has a little bit of baggage. Like, you know, he's made some mistakes. Like the relationship with the sister is nicely complicated, you know, and all the characters have really good arcs actually. Like, but when you get to the end of the film, you understand how each character has ended up in each spot. And I think that's a pretty extraordinary storytelling. I have to tell you my one moment of disappointment. And that is that you did not get a fight scene. And I reckon if the producer had seen how dogged you are at defense on the basketball court, I reckon they would have written one in. Like, is that did you push for one? Did you push for a moment of
I wasn't pushing for anything. I was like, thank you so much for having me here. I'll do whatever you guys want, and I'll dye my hair orange.
It's so good. But your entrance is great.
Oh, thanks a lot. Yeah. And it was interesting because we actually stopped during the pandemic. Like, we shut down production during the pandemic, which was actually really kind of like scary for many reasons. I mean, health and safety, first of all, but then you're like, oh, are we ever going to be able to come back? You know, are we ever going to make movies again? And then I think this project was actually one of the first ones where we or Marvel figured out how to restart it, you know, in Australia safely. Yeah. And in that time, the time down, I think, I mean, I met with the director, you know, every week, and we would just talk very generally, and then we'd talk about character stuff. So it, like, you know, as small as my character was, like, who cares about the backstory? But we would like figure out backstories for the character. So, like, I guess what I'm trying to say is that, like, I think the pause actually creatively, like, helped everything. I think. I mean, obviously, more time on any creative endeavor always helps, right? When used correctly. I think the time spent in between, we were able to figure out, like, and then when I told the director that, like, I do martial arts plus, he was like, we should have written something in there, but I wish you got that sooner.
Well, I think you do a good job of giving John some backstory, because if you want to. And you don't have to sign up for this, but I have an idea for a TV series for John where he is running all sorts of shady businesses because he's tricky, he's cocky, I reckon he's got a finger over here, he's got something over there, he's got three things on the move over there, he's got it all spinning at once, and he's cocksure, and he's pretty funny, and he's on the run. And I would love to see John trying to run his seven shady businesses with all these different characters. John series for you.
shady for sure,
Even the flipping the bird at one point when he's running off, I was like, was that also written on the script, or was there angles that you introduced that you wanted to play?
Yeah, I think we all, so far I've been very lucky in that the projects I've done, the directors really trust us to go for it. They hired a bunch of comics in Crazy Rich Asians. It was a bunch of comics, you know, it was literally stand-up comics, not just comics, but, like, you know, Nico Santos, Jimmy O Yang, me, Aquafina, not to mention everybody else with funny bones. But when they hired, it was like, just go for it. Like, we hired you here, we might as well use your skill set. And that's a testament to the producers and the director.
Right.
Like believing in us and recognizing what we could bring to the table. And also, just giving us free reign. So a lot of the times we would, me and Simu and Nora, Aquafina, we would just go for it, you know. And nine times out of 10, we wouldn't use it. And then one time, all you need is one, right? And then if giving the director the options, right? And so to answer your question, it wasn't, a lot of stuff wasn't written on the page. And then I would like I said, we had a whole pandemic to think about what we could add to the script. And so I just went, like, it took me 5 months to think of giving the finger, which is such a, like, what a original idea that was. And then on the day you try a few different types, right? And then the director's, oh yeah, I like that. Back to my very first point, you don't know what's going to happen in the edit, and then they just use whatever they want to use. So it was, I was curious myself. I was like, I wonder which one they're going to use for this one, or even if they're going to cut, because a lot of scenes got cut too. You know, there's a lot of scenes where me and other people were having interactions, and that stuff got cut. And so it's interesting from my perspective what they use and what they don't use.
That whole scene reminded me of like when I was a kid and I first saw the original Star Wars, and they go into the cantina, and you're like, geez, what's going on in this shady place? And this, all of that area was beautifully realized, even down to the cage match fight,
The costumes. The costumes and the I mean special effects, obviously, but also the production design, right? It just looked really cool, and they use a lot of different colors, and they physical sets. I mean, that all stuff was real. That was a whole real set. I mean, I don't give away what's in there, but the physical space was real. They built that cage. They built the smaller cages. Everything was like that was a physical set. The whole way, and we used it. Yeah. You know, people were hammering against it. People were in costume. So, the physical set was pretty amazing. I guess that's, again, going back to Marvel, having the resources to pull stuff off, this whole set, which, you walk in and you're like, how can anyone ever afford this? But they
it's
did.
Because they're Marvel. It's good. What are you going to say?
And also, right next to the Comedy Store in Sydney.
Right.
So, it was at the Fox Studios right next to the Comedy Store. So it's so weird. Life is weird, man. It goes full circle like that. Like, you're suddenly, next thing you know, you're next to the Comedy Store, our old stomping grounds.
Yeah.
Before Mary Renee, and then you'll just make a Marvel movie right next door,
It's insane to think that your career's taken you 200 meters. It's great.
No, for real. Yeah. Just that 200 meters, and it's a Marvel movie.
When were you booked? How early were you cast in the film before it came out?
I wasn't that early. I think they they were definitely still finalizing the script, and they're figuring out characters.
Yeah.
So I don't know how much I can talk about it, but I actually auditioned for another character that didn't even make the story.
Right.
Then it became this character, a completely different character. So a lot of that, like putting my show business hat on, a lot of that is, drafts change.
Yeah.
Right. You can only imagine how much drafts can, you don't have to imagine. Like, we know, like, drafts change, and then our characters get written out or combined, or scenes change. And then also, some of it is just they want to see you see what you can do with any character. And then they're like, oh, we like him. Let's find something else for him or her. Right.
Yeah.
So I wouldn't say I was that early on. It was definitely after the script was significantly, after quite a final version of the draft, I would say.
Right. And talk about some heavy hitters in it as well. Like, this movie, like Tony Leung, Michelle Yeoh, Ben Kingsley, it's like, these aren't just stars. These are super stars. And I feel like the acting comes through. Like, there's the moment where Shang-Chi's dad meets his mum for the first time, and it's a beautifully choreographed fight scene. But as you're watching it, you don't know it at the time, but as you're watching it, you're like, holy shit, they're falling in love. And you can see it all in their movements, but in the way they're acting all the way through it. And it's God, it's a masterclass, isn't it?
Yeah, I mean, also Yuen Wah is in it. There's a lot of people. Yeah. People flew all the way to Australia and quarantined for 2 weeks just to just to be part of it. Yuen Wah is a Hong Kong. Michelle Yeoh and Tony Leung, Hong Kong legends. Yuen Wah is a Hong Kong movie legend. He's in Kung Fu Hustle. He's in it. That was a surprise. I mean, Ben Kingsley.
Even the guy from Creed 2, Florian.
Florian, who's a great guy, by the way. He and
is
I.
Is he great? Well,
yeah. Oh, he's such a cool guy. Like he actually is also a, he was like a amateur boxer with a significant number of fights. And he was going to go pro, and then he got Creed 2. And he was, where in the world are you going to find someone who is that big, that that looks that muscular, and also is actually a boxer, but also is an actor? Because he wasn't just a boxer. He was actually also acting at the time.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? So they the casting was like, it's literally down to, there's like three people on the planet who could do this, you know? And
he was terrifying in Creed 2, because I love Michael B. Jordan. I've loved him since he was in The Wire. Yeah. And, you know, I know it's only a movie, but when you're in the context of the film, you're like, well, he's in trouble, because that guy is massive.
And he's nuts, But sweetest guy in real life, the nicest guy. And to your point, all these legends in the movie, which is huge. And also, you're speaking about the choreography. I mean, that's also another legend, Brad Allen, Melbourne boy. Brad Allen, who passed away.
It was dedicated to him.
The fight action director, Brad Allen, who, what a cool story, you know. So this is a Melbourne boy who watched Jackie Chan movies and fell in love with the idea of martial arts, specifically in movies. So he watched Jackie Chan Hong Kong movies, white Melbourne guy, and was like, you know, I want to do that. So he goes to China to learn and train in Wushu and all these other different martial arts, and specifically for to get into movies for stunt work. And then so he trains for years, learns Chinese. I can't remember how long he trained for. It must have been at least 10 years or so. And then he goes back to Melbourne one day, or he gets hired on the set of Mr. Nice Guy. Jackie Chan is shooting in Melbourne, Australia.
Yep.
And the story goes, you know, Jackie not happy with the stunt guys on the set. And then Brad Allen is like, hey, I can, in Chinese, Brad Allen goes like, hey, I think I can do what you're asking me to do. And then he does it. And Jackie Chan's like blown away. Like, you're amazing. You can speak Chinese. You're in.
Yep.
And Jackie Chan like handpicked, you know, and mentored Brad Allen, who went on to become, like, you can see him in this other movie fight scene he does. It's a legendary fight scene he does with Jackie, where he does so many kicks. He jumps and does so many kicks that it looks like it's wild work.
I've seen that.
So everyone, if you're listening to this and you get nothing out of me talking, go Google Brad Allen's, you know, Google Brad Allen's highlight reel. It's unbelievable. And it's, what an inspiring story. And what's even more inspiring by that is that Brad Allen actually mentored other people. So he would find, so my friend Young, he's a Canadian Chinese guy who was brought on to Shang-Chi. He also worked on Kingsman and brought on Chris Owen, you know, this African-American guy. So Brad Allen would find these guys and do for them what Jackie did for him.
Yes.
You know what I mean? And bring on this next generation. And the how inspiring Brad Allen is, is only matched by the tragedy of his passing, because Brad Allen is the link between old school Hong Kong and the modern cinema.
Right.
You know, and we lost that link forever, because the guys who were Brad Allen's seniors who taught him, they're not as active anymore, because they're just older, you know, and they're still around, but they're not as active. So Brad Allen was the one who had the perfect mixture of experience, skill, and youth. You know, I mean, he wasn't a young guy, but he was relatively young, and he was mentoring other people. Yeah, his passing is a real tragedy. And all the martial artwork you see in Shang-Chi is, you know, it's just, it's a glimpse of someone who is at the peak of action designing, you know. He's like, he knows, he sees the Matrix, he sees how to do it, you know. And it's a real, it's such a shame, you know. It's such a shame. Melbourne boy as well.
Yeah,
it's
so important to, you know, as you get older, my theory is that as you get older, you've got to teach young people and show them how to make things, and you've got to let young people show you where the world is at so you evolve along with them. And having that link broken is, you know, not just a tragedy for the passing of the man, but for that channel of intellect and history as well.
And that art form, yeah, that whole, you know, and it's really, they really pioneered a new, well, I mean, they took what, they learned the lessons from the Jackie Chan stunt team, and they were kind of like, they invented this idea of action directing, you know, in Western cinema, the idea that you would get someone in just to, not just a fight choreographer, but like design, not just the fight, but the camera angles to film it, you know what I mean? And like, so it like, it, like really come up with the entire concept of how to shoot this fight scene, you know, and it's a real shame.
Yeah,
it's a real shame.
I'm looking forward to seeing how they incorporate this movie into the, you know, whatever they're doing next with Phase 4. I'm starting to have a theory on where they're going after seeing Black Widow and seeing where Eternals looks like it might be going. And you know, it's funny, isn't it? You see these movies now, and you enjoy it, and you go, I want to see a sequel, but I also want to see how they're going to interact with other people now. I want to see what the new dynamic is going to be. And you know, it's a hard thing to talk about with you, because it's like, I don't know what you know. I know Marvel is really secretive.
First
right?
of all, yeah, I don't know anything, and also I'm more scared of Marvel security than the government. So those guys were like on us every day. Like, Marvel security is no joke. The sweetest people, but man, they were like, they were on it. Marvel's on it in terms of security. But also, I what I really get out of this whole Phase 4 thing is like again, like, it's why Marvel is such a great company to work for. Not just they have a track record and they're great to work with creatively, and they have the resources and the will to take risks and do stuff, but like, they move on. You know what I mean? Yeah. They're like, we need to tell the next story. We've done that.
Yeah.
We need to tell the next story. You know, in the hands of lesser minds, it would be Iron Man 8.
Yes.
You know what I mean? Like, we would be seeing that again. But they know, like, it's the Seinfeld thing, right? Leave people wanting more.
Yeah.
Let them want more. And then we move on to the next thing, you know? And it's very stand-up comedy, you know? We don't like to, you know, as stand-up comics, you don't like to beat it to death, right?
Yeah.
We're like, boom, and then
I'm done.
Bit, and then, great bit. Wow, we're not going to break down the bit. We're not going to turn the bit into a sketch. It's like, great bit. You like that bit? Okay, watch that bit again, maybe. But we are, you know, we're like on to the
bits.
Next thing.
Yeah,
we're on to the best bit is always ahead, right? The best bit. That's how Daniel Towns. Saying Sydney's own Daniel Towns told me, your best joke is ahead of you, you know?
Yeah.
And I think that's what I really appreciate with working with Marvel as well, is that for them, their best stories are ahead of them. You know, they don't milk it to death, you know? They go like, let's go to the next one.
I've got two more questions I want to ask you. I don't want to hold you for too long, because I checked the New York time and went, oh, that's late. So, you know. I'm curious, with your stand-up, what do you think's been the most interesting skill that you've developed since you've been in America? Is there anything that kind of stands out? Has there been something that you've learned and that you apply?
I think if I do say so myself, I think I've gotten better at stuff in general. I think man, it's so hard to put into words. I think that, like, when I moved to America, I was exactly 30 years old, and I could feel myself doing, I was 30 years old, and I was kind of maturing as a person, but also as a comic. And I had that, I'm not sure if you had this moment, I'm sure you did, but like that thing where you're like, you're 30 years old and you feel like you're already turning into a different person, but you're still doing 25-year-old bits.
Right. Yep.
Right. So your self-expression in our case, the stand-up comedy, wasn't matching where we were going
yeah,
as people and creatively. And so I definitely felt that when I was 30 of like, you know, I need to, if I can push through this, I'll come out the other side like a better comic. But you know, it's the black tunnel, right? Like, no, you right. don't know how, you don't know when you're going to push through it, if you'll push through it. So I think that's a lot of what I was experiencing in America was, I was lucky to move right at that time when I think I really needed to yeah. get better, or I had the opportunity to kind of really develop. And, you know, New York City had so much stage time and I was able to kind of jump on and really try to figure it out and get my voice, or hopefully find a voice or find how to do things, you know? So I think that's, if anything, that's kind of the thing that stands out the most. I mean, I'm sure there's technical aspects I've gotten better at, and we can always get better, right? Like when I watch myself, I'm always we just see the mistakes. Like, we shouldn't, like the timing on that could be better. I rushed that, or, you know, that's annoying, or, you know, whatever. So we can always get better. But I think that would probably the, if I had to say something, it would be that kind of like being 30 and doing 25-year-old jokes when you should be doing 30-year-old or older jokes, you know? So I think that was probably
it's so exciting, isn't it? Because you never realize quite when you've improved. Like, I reckon you improve, and then it's at some point a little bit after that where you're in the middle of doing a gig and you're like, I think I might be better.
Like you definitely go like, I'm better than I was before. But I think we also, you know, like I like to think the great stand-ups like yourself and all that, like no one really rests on their laurels. They just keep iterating.
Yeah.
Right. So it's almost like, yeah, of course I'm better than I was when I started. God damn. Yeah. If I wasn't, then what a waste of everyone's time. But, but you're also like, oh yeah, I just need to get better. I just need to, you know, I don't know if that feeling ever stops. You know, I don't have enough perspective on a career. I've only been doing it like 12 years. So,
right.
But just in that 12 years, I'm just like, oh yeah, that, like, I think I've gotten a little bit better from there. Like, undoubtedly, we can still get better. I'm just saying, like, in that 12 year span, it's like, oh yeah, sometimes you go watch, not just your earlier bits, which is obviously cringeworthy. I see yourself as a younger comic, but you go back to older ideas. And I don't know if you've ever done this where you're like, there's old ideas that maybe you never published.
Right.
Publicly,
yeah.
And you're like, oh, there's something funny there, but I'm a little bit better at finding how to do this better now. You know, stuff like that happens, you know, to me a little bit, you know.
Yeah, I like going back and finding an old thing, and structurally it's good, but you're just better, so you can kind of rework it. I can't cope with the last 5 years, but before that I'm always nicer. So when I was younger, I was like, oh, my comedy at 25 is so embarrassing. Then I got to 35 and I was like, oh, that stuff at 25 is so cute. Look at him trying to work things out. 30 though, you know, so it's always kind of in 5 year increments. I was trying to explain to Alexi, I'd only met you briefly at a couple of gigs as a young man, but the moment where we first kind of met, I don't know if you remember, was you gave me one of the biggest laughing fits I ever had at the Melbourne Comedy Festival when you made your sudden appearance in The Incident. And I had no idea that you had been out the back of that room for half an hour, how long, and when you just walked out and announced, hello, I am Ronnie Jang, and then you just walked out of the room, the idea that you had committed to sitting out there for half an hour was genuinely a gobsmacking moment. I saw that show 3 times. I loved it so much.
And what a cool, you know, my wife still talks about it. The incident.
Yeah, great.
That was like, what a like introduction to that world, you know. I think, I don't know what it's like for white Australians, but as like a international student in Australia,
yeah,
like that was such a separate world, you know, that performing arts world, that live performing world, not to mention the Melbourne Comedy Festival. You know, it's such a different planet to what I was doing in Australia. Like, I don't know, because I don't have any other perspective other than my own, so I don't know whether white Australian person of my age in my university would have felt the same way. But for me, it was like, this is such a different world. Like, live performing, it's not about money. It's just a cool thing to do. You know, these two experienced performers asking you to do it, sincerely asking as well. They want like condescendingly, like, come and do this stupid, you know, idea. It's like, hey, we would really love it if you did it, you know, and they were super welcoming to me. And that whole thing was crazy. It kind of started my relationship and love affair with not just live performing, but with the Melbourne Comedy Festival.
Yeah.
You know, that whole thing became like a, it was like, oh, this is a, what a cool family. And then you know, with a comedy festival, it's like, it's amazing. And then you're like, oh, this is what it is. And then you're like, oh, this is what it is. It's actually amazing. You know, like, it's just, Like you just need a bit of perspective on it, right? Like, you never know. Yeah. And anyway, but yeah, no, thanks. It's good that, you know, you're thanks for reminding me about it.
Oh man, it was so good. And but what I've always liked is that there's always been a real work ethic with you, and I think it's a similar thing to what I've always thought, which is the only thing you can control is self-improvement. That's the only thing you can control. Everything else is a little bit, you know, you could be undone by a time slot. You could be undone by, you know, all sorts of things.
Oh, man.
You know, you could be 100%. Undone by someone in the 7 p.m. show who was consistently going over. So your 9:45 show is constantly starting at 10:30, you know, all that kind of stuff.
Right.
But, you know, watching your rapid improvement was quite overwhelming. It was so good. I remember, you know, we did the Comedy Zone, and then it felt like I blinked and I'm sitting in the town hall watching you just dominate. And it was intoxicating. It was really great.
No, thanks so much. I'm very lucky that I had people who gave me opportunities. You know, the Melbourne Comedy Festival really gave me opportunities. You gave me opportunities. Everyone I ever met in comedy, honestly, there's like, there's maybe one or two people who are like less than friendly, but every other person I ever met in Australian comedy was the best, the most encouraging, supportive, you know, like gave advice, and nothing, like, just encouraging to me. And I'm lucky that they gave me the chances I did. And every time someone gave me a chance, I was always like, I always tried to make the most of it, right? Just to not let them down, and not to be like, oh, he got the chance because he's this Asian guy, and so you know what I mean, like, you get it and then you just suck, and then it's like, oh, you know, then it hurts all Asian people, and also it makes you look like an asshole because it's like, oh, you only got it because you're Asian. So every time someone gave me a chance, I was like, I have to over deliver. And Australia, everyone was always super cool, you know. The fact that people were, I always felt in Australia, people were always very encouraging, and people were like, they might be, I always said, like, people always felt like at worst envious, but not jealous.
Right.
It was always like, oh man, that's cool. I wish I could do something like that. I never felt like anyone who was like, that's cool, I wish I got that instead of that guy. You know, like, generally speaking, I think it was very, I don't know. I just always, it was very positive in Australia. I mean, I'm also lucky. Like, I realized I had a very charmed, I had a very charmed, like, time in Australian comedy. Right. Like, again, people would give me chances, and everyone was very nice. And also, you know, we're all unique, but because I was one of the only Asian voices, it was very hard for someone to replace me. It was like, if you need an Asian person, it was just me. So I realized I have a very, you know, charmed perspective on it. But yeah, I never.
But you worked hard as well. Like, you had opportunities, and you worked hard. And also, you know, do not underestimate how impeccable your manners are. Like, it's like, your parents must be rapt. Your manners are so good, to the extent that now, like, sometimes you post something on Instagram, and like, there'll be something like, I'll take a screenshot of it and I will just send it to like Will or Limo, just going, fuck, Ronnie's working in with The Rock, like, you know. And it's a real joy. There's no sense of anything other than, fuck, nice one, Ronnie, it's awesome.
No, yeah, those guys are cool. And you know what it is, it's like, like no one can, like we can't. Alan Havey at The Cellar put it the best. He said, like, with stand-up comedy, like, we're all in it for ourselves, but we're all in it together.
Yes.
And it's like you can't no matter how good you are, you're going to work with other people at some point. Even in this solo sport of stand-up comedy, you're going to work with other people, you know? Yeah. Like, how can you not be nice to your colleagues? Like, not even politically just to get ahead, but just as a, you know what I mean? Like, as a human being, like, we're literally the only ones who can relate to this stupid nonsense.
Right.
Like, how can you not?
It's like a baseball team, isn't it? It's like all baseball is kind of individual performances within a team concept, and it's fascinating. I'll let you go, but I've just so my last question for you is, so my two favorite moments of watching your career, like I've enjoyed everything, but my two things of like going fucking Ronnie was one, appearing in a Marvel movie. That was an ongoing conversation. I loved it. I was so excited. But the other one was seeing you sit courtside at the New York Knicks, and you're just sitting there watching the Knicks. And you know, as an NBA fan, I was like, fuck, that is amazing. Is there anything that stands out to you where that you're in the middle of it and you just look around and go, holy shit, what is happening?
No, I mean, I've been pretty, I don't know. I've been very lucky, and there's some stuff where I'm like, oh man, this is super cool. But I never felt like I belong there, or like, now I've made it, you know, like nothing, you know what I mean? Like I've been lucky to get a lot of wins.
Right.
In my creative expression, you know, I've had more wins that kept me going, and that kind of kept me going. But I never felt like it was the more wins I got, the only thing I realized more was that, like, the only thing that makes you happy is self-expression, you know, because you're never gonna be famous enough or have enough money or have enough connections or know enough famous people, you know. But it's just the self-expression that is so much fun, right? The self-expression is fun, and all that helps is help you express yourself more resources to express yourself, or on a better platform, or whatever it is. So look, it's very easy for me to say that, you know, because we're all making money from self-expression, right? We're able to make a living from it. So it's easy for us to be like, that doesn't matter. But honestly, it's like, it is self-expression, right? Because everything else is so fickle or shallow or can be taken from you or whatever. But the self-expression is much fun. So to answer your question, like, no, really. I think I've been lucky to get a few wins, and like, when you're winning, I think I have a bit more perspective on it now. So I've learned to enjoy the moment a bit more.
Yep.
Like what I was saying earlier about like being part of a movie that is going well. Like I've been lucky to be in a few movies, specifically speaking, Crazy Rich Asians and Shang-Chi, which were both, you know, very financially and culturally successful movies that were trying to do something for Asian culture. And I was a small role in both of them. So whatever, I'm not saying this for myself. I'm just saying, like, being able to be a small part of them. The first time around with Crazy Rich Asians, like, I felt like I was in the moment. I felt like I was like, oh yeah, this is cool, you know, but it was my first movie. So at that time, I intellectually understood that this was rare and, you know, living the moment. And I think I did. I felt like I was living in the moment. And then 3 years later, doing Shang-Chi, it was like, oh, it actually is super rare to be part of you know what I mean? It's hard.
Yeah.
Like, even if we're not even talking about money, movie budget, it's rare to get a movie budget of that size. And then also for it to be that well received, or for it to do well, right, culturally and financially, it's rare. And so the second, especially with the pandemic, I think the pandemic, like when it shut everything down, it really made, I don't know, it made me appreciate things a lot more. So this time around, it was very much like, oh, we have to appreciate the moment. We have to, you know, at the premiere, we have to like like live in the moment and really appreciate. It's rare. It's very, it is truly very rare to be part of these big projects that are going well. To bring it all the way back to the very first thing we're talking about, the number of things that have to go right for something to go well, you know. So I think I have a little bit better perspective on it now, you know, and I don't feel like I was jaded before, but you know, like being able to self-express again was like, oh yeah, it's the best, you know, it's the best. Yeah.
It's great. And how do you think the Knicks are gonna go this season?
I'm actually a Nets guy now. I'm trying to get next time you're in New York, so please let's try to go watch a game together. But for me, the Nets I'm trying to convert New Yorkers into being Knicks fan.
Mate, that is like, you know, they're star studded, but the Knicks are the Knicks, but the Nets are everywhere.
This is the whole podcast. If we want to go into it, we can. But I'm just saying, look in New York. Can we just support competency?
Yes.
For once, not just because they're a star loaded team, but look at how they've built themselves. Yes. Nets. The Knicks haven't signed a rookie to a beyond a rookie deal for 20 years.
Yeah.
They haven't drafted a rookie which they've signed beyond a rookie contract for 2 decades.
It's crazy.
That's crazy. Those odds are crazy. You could flip a coin and, you know, have better odds than that. So I'm just saying support competency in New York. Yeah.
Support competency.
Support both.
Yeah,
support both. That's all I'm saying. Support both.
And you know, Patty Mills is there now, so that's even more reason, right?
Australian.
Mate, it is so good to see you, and I hope you don't find this patronizing, but like, I'm really proud of everything from the young man that I met to where you are now. It's super exciting, and I'm loving it. I can't wait to see what you do next.
Yeah, thanks. Thanks again for all the support and encouragement when it was coming up. And really good to see you again, too. Yeah.
I'll take you up on those NBA tickets.
Please, yeah. Please.
Thank you to Ronnie for being my guest this evening. I know I said it before, but it has just been so exciting watching his career, and I was rapt that he had time to join us today. Pretty cool, right? Keep an eye out for Ronnie and Shang-Chi or any of his stand-up specials or his different TV shows. Go and find him and feel good for the rest of your day. Also, a big thank you to Rachel for being our Patreon for this episode. We really appreciate you putting in... not only, signing up to the tiers, but also just putting in time to listen to this podcast and write to us. If you're enjoying the Big Squid podcast, please leave the show a top review on Apple Podcasts or wherever you listen to your podcasts. I don't know if they even really have... Do all those sites have places where you can rate stuff? I guess they do. But if you'd like to give us a top review, that would be great. The Patreon is also available if you'd like some extra Big Squid material in your life. I reckon I'll give everyone a bit of time, but the Rove Q&A podcast, which has some great questions in it, that will drop, I reckon, the 27th of October, just before a certain Gallifreyan doctor comes back to entertain us for 6 more episodes. Anyway, remember, tomorrow's episode welcomes back Question Everything standout Alexi Toliopoulos as we give our review of Shang-Chi and the Legend of the Ten Rings. I thought today we could finish with a quote from legendary basketball coach John Wooden on speaking about success. Success is peace of mind, which is a direct result of self-satisfaction in knowing you did your best to become the best you are capable of becoming. Little tongue twister there, right? Thanks for listening. Until then.